Back together again, you and I, Monday, July 29th, 2024, on Connecticut Today, where I started the show with thoughts on proposals from President Joe Biden to reform the U.S. Supreme Court. We also got input on those ideas from Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and Vice President of Legal Affairs Mike O'Neill, and a columnist and blogger Chris Powell stopped by to talk about recent news surrounding the 2024 White House race.
All right, let's start off the new week here as we kick it off on this Monday, July 29th. If I can, allow me, because I guess you can because it's my show and I can do it this way. Allow me this. This stuff, these so-called proposals that are being kicked around here by President Biden, which kind of means they're also have the imprimatur of the Harris campaign, these proposals to reform the Supreme Court, none of these are going to happen. All right? You have to understand something here. None of these are going to happen. And none of these are going to happen anytime soon. Okay? They're just not going to happen. And this is all window dressing. This is all phony. This is all, it's pandering. It's tossing a tantrum. Because the two things Democrats hate when they don't break that way for them politically, there are two main things that they don't like: the Supreme Court and the Electoral College. Now, they're awfully kind of quiet about the Electoral College when there's a Democrat in the White House. You notice that. They haven't said too much about the Electoral College over the past 4 years, and they probably won't say it anymore if Kamala Harris and whomever ends up to be her VP running mate for current Vice President Harris is, if they win the White House. They will say very little, if anything, because that Electoral College will give them some sort of a victory in November, or maybe if there's a longer count, something on the day after. So they usually kick and scream like little kids about the Electoral College. We're not hearing that now. Now, should Donald Trump, and for the moment, J.D. Vance, I guess he's kind of still the vice presidential candidate, but you never know. If that Electoral College were to give the former president a victory again come this November, the day after the election, you're going to hear the kicking and the screaming starting from all these people who want to make sure that the Electoral College votes go to the person with the highest number of votes. What is this idiocy called? The National Popular Vote Compact or anything? So that'll start again. So they supremely hate the Electoral College because it's there to make sure that smaller states or states with less of a population can somehow influence an election as much as any other state does or American territory. But this lunacy now, and I do call it lunacy, this lunacy now, which is born out of a few things regarding the Supreme Court, is, again, it's born and born out of and born of, you know, really nothing more than sour grapes here. When you look at it here, and it becomes nothing more than sour grapes. So let's look at this in detail and see what they really mean here, because it's pretty evident. Now, at the beginning, we all know the Supreme Court is the top level of one of the three branches of government, right? Let's go back to our junior high and high school civics here. You have the executive branch, which is the White House, the presidency, and all the cabinet members. You have the legislative branch, which is Congress, the House, and the Senate, and all their various and powerful committees in some way, shape, or form. And then you have the federal judiciary, which consists of some levels of courts, appellate courts, federal circuit courts, and the U.S. Supreme Court, which oftentimes takes on a number of cases every term from October to June with the summer off that tends to not really decide law, but decides whether many laws are constitutional or unconstitutional, or the interpretation of thereof happens in a certain way. So the president now unveils. Now, he's a lame duck. We all know that. And I don't say that with any great joy or anything. Listen, they did what they did, as undemocratic as it is. They went ahead and did what they did. So Joe Biden, I kind of feel good for him now. He is unbound. And what he will do is now, in the next 3 or 4 months till he leaves the White House, or exactly till the election, and then coming up in the next 5 or 6 months until he steps aside in office in early January for either Kamala Harris or Donald Trump again for the next 4 years or eight, you don't know. He's going to feel unbound, and they will use him. The Democrats will use him to float things that they dare not have Kamala Harris say. Now, she has come out earlier today, said, well, you know, I support whatever the president said on the Supreme Court, but it still does not have her real fingerprints on it. Understand? So Joe Biden can say this, and people can say, well, okay, so, but they kind of do this with a wink and a nod to insert this in the race. And make no mistake here. The Democrats are tossing a tantrum here with the U.S. Supreme Court because they don't like the makeup, the current 6-3 on most issues. Some issues it's 5-4, but on a lot of issues it's 6-3 with a conservative lean, and they don't like the numbers there, which, by the way, is in effect a lot of their own fault. We'll get you up to date with that in a moment, my thinking there. And they don't like what the court says, so they make up all this. And the reason I say it's made up is because there's no proof to it. And they love to point to Justice Clarence Thomas and other justices, whether it was taking, gifts or trips or whatever. And listen, I'm all for disclosing stuff. That's okay. But this notion that because somebody flies a flag upside down or somebody takes gifts, that automatically warps their thinking on a case has simply not been proven. Now, here's the problem. The problem is the people who will gnash their teeth and cry and moan and throw tantrums about not liking the court, they appeal to the lowest common denominator of voter. In other words, they're not legal scholars. Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi, Alexandria Ocasio or Ocasio-Cortez, Chuck Schumer, these are not legal scholars. Now, they may be attorneys to some level or way, shape, or form, I'm not sure. But you ever notice the people who will constantly berate the Supreme Court? Let me tell you right now, the Supreme Court's not perfect. I'm not saying it is. But what is going on here is a lot of phoniness about this whole thing. They never maybe I shouldn't say never. They hardly ever, meaning they, the usual, Democratic suspects here, they will never try to actually explain their opposition to a Supreme Court ruling. Now, we generally have to get that from scholars, people who actually have a brain, people who, take the time to read decisions that you may agree or may not agree with. So what this is saying is what President Biden is trying to do here is kind of introduce the thought here that, hey, because we don't like what the Supreme Court does, because we don't like their rulings, which for however any justice thinks are based in some sort of judicial precedence and logic to them, and because some of them take gifts or some sort of consideration from people or friends, that they're automatically warped. Yet the decisions are. But do you ever notice that there's very little, if any, effort to actually dissect those decisions? Well, the court is obviously warped because it said, okay, but here's my question. Do you know why they said that? Do you ever try and pick out parts of an opinion, either from the majority or minority of the court, and say, okay, here's what they said, and here's why I disagree with it? No, because they know generally, and I say this with all the love in my heart, voters are not that smart. and the Supreme Court. And listen, 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 Republicans do this, too. They campaign on the Supreme Court as well. But last time I checked, the Republicans weren't trying to alter the court in any way. And we're not trying to put in some sort of rules that have never been there. Now, part of the reason is that the Democratic administrations and liberals, they have Supreme Court justices who won't go away when they tell them to. And I'm not for forcing anybody to retire. I'm not. Lord knows. I hope I'm here for another 10 to 15 years. Eventually, I'd like to stop, but you know what I mean. But, you know, there is this bemoaning of the Supreme Court because it's a 6-3 conservative court. Well, you know what? With all due respect, and I don't wish to speak ill of the dead, I really don't, but the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, when her health started to fail, she was told numerous times, Judge Ginsburg, Justice Ginsburg, we love the service you put in, but you may want to consider stepping aside while Barack Obama is still in the White House. She was urged to do that numerous times, and she wouldn't. Currently, there are calls for Justice Sonia Sotomayor to possibly step aside. She is in her early 70s. She mentioned the other day that she sometimes travels with a Supreme Court-appointed physician because, like me, although I think she's type 1, I'm type 2, she is a diabetic, and there are now worries, and of course, we wish her many good years and good health ahead, obviously, but there are worries now that if she should not necessarily pass away, we don't want to see that or anticipate that, but if she should have to step aside from the court, that in consequence or in concert with, say, a Donald Trump win in November could quite possibly make it a 7-2 conservative Supreme Court in the next 4 years if Mr. Trump is reelected, no matter how long he ends up serving. So part of this numerical disadvantage here that Joe Biden is trying to artificially jimmy here and rig by these mandatory term limits or mandatory retirement ages for the justices are simply because a lot of these justices, particularly on the Democratic side, don't know when to go away. There's a lot more to unpack here. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Democrats, liberals, Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, they suddenly want to start playing around with the makeup and the job descriptions and the intended terms of the U.S. Supreme Court. Why now? Gee, I wonder why. That's a rhetorical question. Joining us right now, Mike O'Neill, our buddy, our pal, Landmark Legal Foundation attorney and VP of Legal Affairs, to talk about some of these proposals that President Biden put forth in an op-ed about possibly reforming the court. Mike, good afternoon. It's Paul today. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Paul. How are you?
Not too bad. Before we get specifically into this, Mike, my people like to say, you probably have a nice case of agita reading this. So you tell me, does any of this make sense? Or give me your macro view here before we start talking about these things individually. Go ahead.
Sure. Well, I think it makes sense when you consider the context, when you consider the fact that there's been 4 years, essentially, of the United States Supreme Court recognizing that it's committed to upholding the fundamental principles of constitutional law and restoring the balance of power and understanding that separation of powers and that each of our respective branches of government needs to stay in its constitutional lane. So it makes sense, and that this has just proved intolerable to the left. And it also makes sense when you consider that Joe Biden is concluding his term and that that there is a upcoming presidential election and that the direction and scope of the United States Supreme Court is incredibly important to a certain specific base of the Democrat Party. And this, the the Democrats and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris need to be perceived as doing something. So this is an effort to pander and secure their base.
Mike, I was remarking before we got cut off there, that a lot of the responses here made me laugh out loud, and they sound like they were coming from both sides. Hey, before term limits on Supreme Court justices, how about term limits for members of Congress? And I kind of laughed out loud. And so it sounds like people on both sides of the aisle get this here, Mike. We can only hope.
Certainly. And it is funny. Joe Biden, I think, has served in the United States Senate and then as president or as vice president and president for over 50 years. And it is ironic that he is trying to move this out in his last few months in office. And I certainly think that, look, if you're going to have if term limits on the United States Supreme Court is problematic, the United States Supreme Court should exist outside the political branches. And it should the reason why they have justices have lifetime tenure is for the simple reason that they should be beyond the political the influence of the political branches. But what you've seen again over it really started in full effort when the Supreme Court reversed Roe versus Wade and reversed Planned Parenthood versus Casey and the Dobbs decision. And with that decision, the left has engaged in a full frontal assault on the integrity of the court. They're attempting to influence the justices' judicial philosophies formally and informally. You see Chuck Schumer and Senator Schumer, Senator Whitehouse engaging in increasingly aggressive rhetoric to try to move these justices off their jurisprudential philosophies in an effort to try to influence them. And what is the fundamental purpose here? Is to ensure that the court continues to exist as one that rubber stamps the left's agenda. And when it doesn't do that, when it revokes the Chevron doctrine, for example, when it imposes the major questions doctrine, when it reverses Roe versus Wade or Planned Parenthood versus Casey, it is just intolerable to the left.
And Mike, I think you nailed it too. And I laughed because they say that, well, you know, we have to stop the court from being overtly political here. But this whole plan of every president getting to name a new justice every 2 years, so by the time you get around to justice number one again, he or she will have served 18 years, and that's enough. Well, my God, isn't that then, Mike O'Neill, dragging them further in to the whole political process here? Isn't that the polar opposite of what they say they aim to do here? What am I missing?
No, absolutely. And it doesn't make sense. I think it doesn't make sense from a couple of levels. Practically speaking, what would you do? So now you look at Justice Thomas and Chief Justice Roberts, who have served in excess of 18 years. So would they be first out the door if this were to become law? In other words, so would the new president, the next president who's reelected, be able to have right off the bat two Supreme Court justices that they'd be able to nominate and move through Congress? I don't understand how practically this would even work, fundamentally how this would work. And I think that's really the base of it, though. As you see, the justices want to – this is – again, this reminded me, Paul, when I read about it this morning when I read the editorial. It struck me of the 1930s, if you can recall, the famous in jurisprudential circles, the switch in time that saved the nine. And this is the Supreme Court in the 1930s was repeatedly striking down New Deal legislation. Was saying, look, that this legislation isn't authorized by the Constitution, these New Deal efforts, these efforts to beget these new administrative agencies, there was no constitutional authority to do that. Well, what happened was FDR, in this famous court packing influence, decided he was going to propose legislation that would expand the Supreme Court from nine justices to 15.
Yeah.
Well, it had the intended effect, and a heretofore moderate justice switched his jurisprudential philosophy from one of striking down these New Deal era legislation to upholding the New Deal era legislation. And essentially that was kind of the turning point for the imposition of this massive administrative state that we kind of enjoy even to this day.
And also, Mike, having read about that myself and watched a couple of documentaries on it, it reinvigorated the conservative movement in the U.S. You know, the Republican Party was floundering and almost inconsequential there. It never got a vote in the Senate. I think it may have gotten a vote in the House, if I'm not sure mistaken. And all of a sudden, you had like almost this rebirth, this kind of defibrillator action on the Republican Party and said, hey, we're all for America here. But like you said, you know, you're going from nine justices to 15 here. This, you know, this doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Absolutely. But it did work. It did affect FDR did get his way in the fact that Justice Owen Roberts, and he was the swing justice at that time, mm-hmm. started upholding this legislation. So he kind of had marginalized those other justices that were striking it down historically. But absolutely. And it remains to be seen what the political outcome of this will be. I don't know if anybody's going to take this seriously in a week from now. It could just be something on the back burner. But I do think it is enough to show that this is just the latest in this unceasing effort to influence the sitting Supreme Court justices. And they want to try to move whatever you might seem the moderate justices, if you will, if you want to ascribe that to any of the justices, off their jurisprudential philosophies into maybe upholding some of these positions that the left is advocating for. Where, again, I really think what I've seen from my perspective, Paul, is mm-hmm. that we're talking politicization of the court. I've seen that the court has removed itself, has, again, gone back to first principles, gone back to separation of powers, gone back to those constitutional principles that are so important to ensuring liberty in our country, and has removed itself from the political calculus. A lot of, unfortunately, the Democrats don't see it that way. The left doesn't see it that way. They think that the court has been politicized when the court is no longer doing what they want them to do.
Yeah, and Mike, finally, and I know this is a tenuous area to get into, but I mentioned it earlier. Mm-hmm. Look, we don't like to tell in this country people went to quit. We don't like to do that. That's not American. Mm. This is why, like you said, the Supreme Court doesn't have term limits. But again, I tell my progressive friends and those who call the station here, listen, instead of a 6-3 court, you may have had, you know, a 5-4 court. Had, for example, the late great Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg stepped aside when she was urged to back in the Obama years, where mm-hmm. she was doing something that thousands, hundreds of thousands of other people are burdened with, fighting cancer. We're hearing rumblings that, you know, Justice Sotomayor, and I'm a diabetic and she is too. She's talking about, you know, life getting a little tougher for her medically. So, you know, maybe, and this would go for somebody on the conservative side too, you know, Mike, maybe some of these justices should stop thinking of themselves as, you know, is not expendable. Everybody is, and everybody can be replaced, and maybe they should reconsider the timing of when they can live a nice retirement and step aside.
Absolutely, and I think you see, and incidentally, with the president of the United States, you can see this playing out in real time right now. Whether the president, and again, we can get into these counterfactuals of mm-hmm. history as much as you want, but the bottom line is the Constitution has a structure. These justices are appointed for lifetime tenure. Nothing is, as you said, Paul, aptly said, nothing is preventing them from stepping down when it might be jurisprudentially feasible for them to do it, and somebody in the White House might share their outcome and their worldview and their judicial philosophy. So again, you're right. The justices, the court has the power to do this. I think it should stay there. I don't think that this is a good idea for the Supreme Court. I think term limits is a bad idea at this point. I think practically speaking, it's going to be really difficult to impose. And again, I do think that this is really, I think the left knows this, but the bigger picture here is just increasing the pressure on the sitting justices to get along with the left's agenda. That's really what's at play here.
Mike O'Neill, as always, thank you, sir. Landmark Legal Foundation, check him out on time. Mike online. Mike, thank you. Appreciate it. Take care.
Take care, Paul.
All right, thank you. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation right there. Check him out online. Always great to have this gentleman on, Chris Powell. Check out his columns, Chris Powell Column. .com. For years and years, he's been an observer of all things good, bad, crazy, and unhinged in Connecticut and around the U.S. Chris, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Still dressing myself, Paul.
I love
usually
that.
Usually by mid-afternoon.
Yeah, I can figure out right leg on this side, left leg on that side. The buttons go up the front. You know, when I put the buttons up the back, they change my medication. Chris,
well, it's more than I can say for our president.
Yeah, and Chris, this is, you have a marvelous column, Ousting Biden, Democrats Show Trump Isn't the Only Liar. You know, Chris, and I've said this for the past week or so, you cannot script comedy this good, or this well, I should say, with a nominating process here that looks like for the second time is going to put someone up for the Democratic Party without any real opposition, and the party that talks all the time about preserving democracy, well, they're apparently not going to allow any challenges, and not even, Chris Powell, allow a traditional, it looks at this point, nominating process at their convention in Chicago.
Yeah, it's all kind of ironic, but, you know, given the timing and the circumstances, I don't fault the Democrats much for automatically anointing Harris because support for her does seem to be overwhelming among rank-and-file Democrats in the polls, and I think that's really a secondary complaint. I think it's much the bigger affront to democracy here was the Democrats really obstructing Robert Kennedy Jr.'s candidacy within the Democratic Party and really making his insurgency impossible. And they really hurt themselves by that, I think, because if they'd let Kennedy become you know, a real competitor, give him the time of day, he would have exposed, you know, Biden's incapacity much longer before the election. I think that might have saved some embarrassment to the party. If Kennedy had managed to do that, then everybody and his brother could have jumped in as a candidate, and we might have had some real real democracy.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, it was, and I was talking about it on the show for the last a couple of years. I found it laughable. You know, a couple, 3 weeks ago after the debate, when everybody, Chris Powell, was just aghast. Oh, what was wrong with Joe Biden? With all due respect, I understand he's the anointed leader of the U.S. And anytime, Chris, a right-leaning network or right-leaning publication would put a video up and say, hey, is he okay? It was dismissed as, oh, I get it, Russian propaganda. I mean, did they take us all for fools? Maybe they did. I don't know.
Well, I think the country was fooled for quite a long time. I mean, you and I watch things pretty closely, but, you know, most people have other things to do with their lives, and they don't. And that's where journalism started covering up for Biden. Journalism's failure is why most people didn't realize Biden's senility, you know, long before the debate in June. And now, really, I think journalism is going along with the silly claim that, you know, Biden is retiring, has chosen to retire for the good of the country. Well, you know, wait a minute. You know, he was forced out by party leaders. There are pretty credible reports, first in the New York Post and then by the independent journalist Seymour Hersh, that Democratic leaders were recruiting Harris to threaten Biden with the use of the 25th Amendment to force him into, you know, an incapacitated state in the law to make Harris acting president. That's totally plausible. And Harris herself really is the most ridiculous one here. She was insisting to the very last second that Biden was fully competent, and she was scolding donors who were complaining that he wasn't competent right up until the last minute. And, you know, Biden himself said he, you know, wasn't going to get out unless God told him to. Well, I did not see any supernatural event here. You know, everybody was lying to us all along, you know, right from the top to the bottom of the Democratic Party. And now they're saying that now that Biden's out,
yeah,
they're saying he was the best president we've had in decades, even as he had the worst approval record of any president in decades. It's just,
yeah.
I guess they do think we're stupid.
Yeah. Oh, he, you know, better than Reagan, better than Abraham Lincoln. Yeah, one of the greatest ever. You know, Chris Powell, it's interesting. You know, I keep in contact with you and a lot of people on social media who've worked in all these kinds of mediums, and I comment with each other, to you folks and folks I know all over the state, on situations exactly like you have said. And one of my taglines is, this is why America hates us, because they us being in the news business and the journalism business, because they think that all of a sudden the White House press corps, which is always huddled up in that little room, they all know each other, they work with each other. You mean to tell me, Chris, there weren't rumblings and mumblings for the past couple of years? As a sound clip I played the other day of one of a network news person said he got a call from a cabinet secretary 2 years ago who said he can't run again. All of a sudden, Chris Powell, you know, the light shines down from the heavens and they know this. Of course they knew, right?
Yeah, well, the press was covering up. I mean, the press now is more partisan and really more venal than certainly any time in my lifetime. And I don't think it's even as honest as it was back, you know, a century or two ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, most of the news organizations in the country began as frankly political organs. They were the, you know, the formal spokespeople for, you know, one party or the other. And now, you know, they're covering up for, you know, for a president who's, you know, senile. It's not legally treason, but morally, it's it's treason.
Yeah. Chris, a couple of other things here. You wonder now, and of course, the honeymoon with Kamala Harris, and bless her, she's raising a ton of money, and she's excited, and that's good, and if it gets people to vote, fine. She's going to have to start answering questions soon, is she not? I mean, where are our brothers and sisters in the press corps, Chris? Have they started to say, well, Madam Vice President, how about a news conference? Is that going to happen or not?
She has the craziest leftist record of just about any Democrat in the country. I mean, the Republicans are starting to point this out. I'm waiting for the press to do its job by, you know, pointing this out as well. I mean, you know, will they give her the treatment they should have been giving Biden? I doubt it, but I imagine Republican, you know, TV and radio commercials will start playing a lot of her clips. They're already doing it on the internet, on YouTube and in other places. But she is associated with at least a half a dozen truly crazy positions that just would not sell in a national campaign. But look, the real remarkable thing here, Paul, I think, mm-hmm. is an ordinary Republican candidate in these circumstances.
Oh.
You know, with a senile president,
it wouldn't be
and
close.
A loony left wing substitute nominee. A normal Republican should be 20 points ahead in the polls.
Yeah.
And you know, the crucial factor here is that no matter how bad the Democrats get, people will still vote for them because, you know, they're just finding Trump just as bad or worse.
I have an old newspaper friend of mine, Chris, and we kid around, and he said exactly what you said. He goes, I would vote for Joe Biden on a ventilator and a feeding tube before Donald Trump. And there it is.
A lot of people feel that way. I understand that. Remember, we were just before Trump was giving his acceptance speech, we were supposed to see the kinder, gentler Trump. Well, that lasted about 5 minutes into his speech. And then, you know, it was 90 minutes of, you know, name calling and insults, and it's getting worse on the campaign trail. I mean, I half wonder that the guy really doesn't want to be president. He just wants to vent.
Chris, finally, speaking of venting, you did write a few paragraphs about something that is such a talkable here in the state. The budget situation, is this a three-card Monty game again? Is this a shell game? Because we got the news about a week or so ago of all this black ink that we have. Do we really have this or not?
Well, you know, we have it if you don't want to see that we don't have it. You know, we've got a state budget reserve of $4 billion, which seems like a lot. Also, still have a $37 billion unfunded liability in our state pension program. So we could put that $4 billion against the pension liabilities, pay them down, and we'd still have a $33 billion unfunded pension plan. What's really going on here is the government employee unions and the social service groups want more money and for themselves, and they see this $4 billion piling up on one side of the state ledger, and they ignore the $37 billion deficit on the other side. So if you look at one side of the ledger, it looks great. If you look at the whole ledger, it's still pretty bad.
Yeah. Chris Powell, check out his stuff, chrispowellcolumn.com. Chris, always good to hear from you. We'll check back in a couple of weeks. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Bye-bye. All right. Appreciate it. There you have it. Chris Powell, great editorialist, columnist around Connecticut for years. At one time, the managing editor of the Manchester Journal Inquirer, or the Journal Inquirer of Manchester, as they like to be called, chrispowellcolumn.com.